Before we get into the what if we're wrong discussion, let me run through some of the systems and open source stories that deserve attention. OpenTTD 16.0 Beta 1 scored 178 points, 32 comments. For listeners who don't know, OpenTTD is an open source remake of Transport Tycoon Deluxe, a classic 1994 city building and transportation management game. The community that maintains it is extraordinary. They've been improving it for over 20 years, adding multiplayer, modern graphics, script-based AI opponents, and now a 16.0 release cycle. The HN comments are enthusiastic, with several people noting that OpenTTD is one of the finest examples of long-term open-source stewardship in gaming.
The hopscotch hashing C++ implementation is a smaller story, 94 points, 16 comments, but technically interesting. Hopscotch hashing is an alternative to the standard linear or quadratic probing you find in most hash tables. The key property: it guarantees that any key can be found within a small constant number of cache lines from its hash bucket. In practice, this means it maintains good cache performance even at high load factors. The implementation in this repository, Tessel's Hopscotch Map, is apparently production quality and has been around for years. Its appearance on the front page today suggests someone rediscovered it, and the community is validating its quality.
The IBM MCGA reverse engineering project is the kind of thing that makes Hacker News uniquely special. 37 points, 6 comments. MCGA, Multicolor Graphics Array, was a graphics subsystem IBM included in certain PS or 2 computers in the late 1980s. It's largely forgotten now because it was quickly superseded by VGA. But someone decided to fully reverse engineer the gate array chip that implements it, mapping every transistor level logic element to understand exactly how IBM designed the hardware 35 years ago.
The reasons people do this work are worth understanding. It's partly preservation, documenting exactly how historical hardware worked before all knowledge of it disappears. It's partly educational, understanding how chips were designed before modern EDA tools is illuminating for hardware engineers. And it's partly competitive intelligence in a historical sense. Reverse engineering IBM's choices reveals what constraints and priorities drove their design decisions.
The nation-state cyber attack analysis scored 68 points and 11 comments. The blog post from Grack dissects what appears to be a sophisticated but ultimately failed intrusion attempt. The analysis is methodologically careful. The author is explicit about what they can conclude versus what they're speculating. The attack characteristics include supply chain targeting, multi-stage payload delivery, and code signing abuse patterns that are consistent with nation-state tooling, though attribution is inherently uncertain.
The HN community's discussion is appropriately skeptical about the nation-state framing. Several commenters point out that sophisticated criminal organizations now use techniques previously associated only with nation-state actors, so sophistication equals state actor is no longer a reliable inference. What the community agrees on: the defensive lesson is that monitoring for anomalous certificate usage and supply chain integrity verification are increasingly non-optional for any organization that could be a geopolitically motivated target.
Now let me touch on two more stories before we get into the what if we're wrong discussion. The California 3D printer surveillance bill scored 410 points, 140 comments. The EFF is pushing back hard on a proposed California requirement that 3D printers embed forensic tracking mechanisms, similar to what laser printers already do with yellow tracking dots. The EFF's argument: this creates a surveillance infrastructure that will inevitably be misused. It chills legitimate speech and manufacturing, and the technical effectiveness is dubious. The HN comments are overwhelmingly opposed to the bill.
This is worth a curriculum corner moment, actually, because the bill raises antitrust and regulatory questions that are worth understanding clearly. When people talk about the government mandating technology requirements on private companies, there are two different legal frameworks in play. The 3D printer surveillance bill is a product mandate. The government requires a feature, similar to how cars must have seatbelts. That's well within normal legislative authority and doesn't involve antitrust law at all. Antitrust law is a different animal. The core of U.S. antitrust is the Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890, which prohibits contracts, combinations, or conspiracies in restraint of trade, and also prohibits monopolization. A common misconception is that having a large market share makes you a monopolist under Sherman. That's wrong. The law doesn't punish size, it punishes exclusionary conduct. You have to acquire or maintain market power through behavior that harms competition, not just by being better or bigger. Standard Oil was broken up not because it was large, but because it used predatory pricing and exclusive dealing to prevent rivals from competing on the merits. So when we talk about AI access controls and government gatekeeping of models like GPT 5.6, the antitrust question isn't, is OpenAI too big? It's, does the access control regime allow OpenAI to exclude competitors through government-backed mechanisms? If government vetting systematically favors established players who have lobbied for the access control framework, that could be an antitrust concern. The legal theory would be something like government-assisted monopolization, which is analytically difficult, but not impossible.
That's an important distinction. Back to the California bill. The housing affordability story connects in an interesting way. The McCombs School of Business Research documented that foreign capital inflows into U.S. real estate markets have a statistically significant effect on housing prices. The finding isn't that foreign buyers are uniquely malicious, it's that any non-consumption demand for housing functions as price support. When people buy homes as investment vehicles rather than places to live, the market dynamics change in ways that price out local residents. The research has been cited in several policy proposals, and the HN community is debating both the methodology and the policy implications.
Now let's get into the what if we're wrong exercise, because I think it's important. And today we have a genuinely strong candidate for the most confident claim that might be wrong.
I'd nominate the consensus view that government vetting of AI models is primarily a national security measure, and that U.S. companies are participating for patriotic or compliance reasons. The HN community seems broadly to accept this framing, even those who oppose the access controls. But what if that's the wrong frame entirely?
Walk me through the alternative.
Here's the strongest counterargument. What if the government vetting framework is primarily a commercial capture strategy rather than a security measure? The argument would go like this. Anthropic and OpenAI are competing with each other and with open source alternatives. Getting the U.S. government to create an access control regime has several commercial effects that benefit established players. It creates regulatory barriers to entry. New entrants can't just release a powerful model, they have to navigate government approval processes. It creates a procurement pipeline where being trusted translates to government contracts worth billions. And it frames the access control as security, which makes it politically durable and difficult for competitors or critics to oppose without looking anti-security.
That's a serious argument. The counterpoint is there's genuine security concern here. Models at the capability level being attributed to GPT 5.6 and Mythos could plausibly assist in biosecurity threats, cyber attack planning, or disinformation at scale. The security concern isn't manufactured.
Agreed. But the security concern being real doesn't mean the access control regime is optimally designed for security rather than for commercial advantage. These can both be true simultaneously. The question is whether the mechanism, government vetting of specific organizations, is actually the right tool for the security risk, or whether it's a tool that happens to also serve commercial interests.
So what would we watch for to know if we're wrong? If the access control framework is primarily a security measure, we'd expect to see it applied consistently across capability thresholds, including to foreign allied AI systems. We'd expect the vetting criteria to be transparent and based on technical risk assessment. And we'd expect the framework to evolve as security understanding improves, potentially loosening controls as risks become better understood.
If instead it's primarily a commercial capture strategy, we'd expect to see the vetting criteria favor established relationship with the government over technical risk mitigation. We'd expect to see U.S. companies with access control backing advocate for the framework to extend to more capability levels over time. And we'd expect to see the framework applied asymmetrically, strict for new entrants, more flexible for established players. If we start seeing those patterns in the next 6 to 12 months, the commercial capture interpretation gains significant ground.
That's a specific and falsifiable prediction. I'll add one more. If the government vetting framework starts being cited in antitrust proceedings, either as a defense by incumbents or as a complaint by new entrants, that's a strong signal that the commercial dimensions have overtaken the security dimensions.